The Bengals Beat podcast is proudly sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company. Now is the time to head out to the production works. It's where we've held our live BBPs. It's home to the incomparable madness that is the 50 West Punch-Out. The place is buzzing every night with sand volleyball leagues, canoeing, kayaking, cycling, trivia, running groups. It's all based out of the Pro Works down on Wooster Pike. You may even spot Optimistic Bobby preaching the Laser Cats gospel. Hope to see you soon at 50 West, where every beer is a journey. Come join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat Podcast, sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company. Every week, your Cincinnati.com beat writers, Paul Danner Jr. and
Fletcher Page,
take you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium. We're plugged into the club from the front office to the field. Win or lose, hiring or firing, we're always here to keep you in the loop. Let's go. All right, welcome to the latest edition of the BBP, the Bengals Beat Podcast, presented, as always, by 50 West Brewing Company. I'm your Bengals beat writer, Cincinnati.com, Cincinnati Inquirer, Paul Danner Jr. with my partner on the beat, Fletcher Page. Fresh off our trip to Atlanta, your hometown, everything came out okay. We didn't go to the Waffle House, and we did not get arrested by that cop that came by us, and we did not get accosted by that person that came up to us on the walkout. For anybody who's wondering about how things turned out, like maybe we need an after walkout podcast when we discuss some of the weird stuff that just went down. But everything turned out okay.
We kept our shirts on.
That was a question that came out, was because when we went past the Waffle House, once we went out for dinner after the podcast, there was a man in there with no shirt on, trying, I'm not sure if he was trying to order breakfast or just hide out from somebody, but he was promptly booted.
Just another Sunday at the Waffle House.
that's what happens at the Waffle House. There are times when people don't wear shirts. Even the Waffle House has a standard of, like, come on, man. Like, it doesn't have to be a good shirt. It doesn't even have to be without lots of big holes. But, like, you just need to make it look like you're trying.
It can be the loose undershirt Gino wears on game days under his pads.
Yes. And that's fine, because it shows that you're attempting. You care enough about your scattered, smothered, covered, and chunked hash browns to, like, just throw something on your upper body and not just expose yourself around other people's food.
Like I said,
got booted.
Just another Sunday at the Waffle House.
It's part of why I love it. Especially the downtown Atlanta Waffle House, that's a special spot. So, good trip for the Bengals, for sure. And now we start flipping it forward to Miami this week. But really, it's amazing. And maybe you disagree, but I feel like it's just amazing how different 3-1 feels compared to 2-2. We would be sitting here trying to stave off the end of the world if they had not finished off that drive and got the touchdown to AJ Green. Because 2-2, now we're talking about how tough the schedule is coming up and how they blew opportunities on the road and their defense. But instead, all is rosy. You're just, oh, heck, they might be 6-2 at the break. You know, I mean, it's just amazing how winning a game and finding a way like that changes perspective.
Right, and the perspective is on a sliding scale. I think before the season you predicted they'd be 2-2 at this point.
Mm-hmm.
With 3 out of 4 games on the road, that's fine back then. But I remember during the middle of the game, you said to me on Sunday, They can't lose this game now because Atlanta's defense was so bad.
Yeah.
And Cincinnati was so good on offense in the first half. They got off to such a great start, and now you're going, they have to win this game. Because if they drop this one, this is the one that you're not stealing, but this is the one you're getting over on.
Yeah, well, you watch that game and you realize, oh, Atlanta's not that good. Like, before the season, there was a thought that Atlanta might be the toughest road game that they play all season. Outside of Pittsburgh, which is just tough for them. But, I mean, you know, you would have thought that. Now that looks like Kansas City, obviously. But also you're like, this is maybe one of the more attainable games in their entire first half. When you look at how bad their defense is and really and definitely was in that first half, when you have games like that in hand, you've got to find you got to win them or else or you're not good enough. But the thing we've learned now is they, you know, we kind of doubt. I feel like everybody wants to make an excuse to why it's just luck and the other shoe is going to drop. Okay, well, Baltimore looks pretty good right now. That win looks better.
Mm-hmm.
Indy has at the very least been extremely competitive with everybody they've played against.
They've been competent.
They've not been as bad as I think we thought they were.
Yeah.
That Indy win looks like it has a little bit more respect on it now. Carolina is a solid team. I mean, and they went in there and just got run on because their linebackers were poor, and that type of stuff happens in this league. And Atlanta beat Carolina the week before. For all that we talk about their defense, they beat Carolina the week before. You did stave off a ridiculous offense. Their offense is potent. So, you know, what are we talking about here? I mean, it's not like they've run through the dregs of the league. They've run through some teams that are kind of a good smattering across the scale. And I think if you come 3-1 out of that, you might be have set a good look. You might have made a good look at where you actually are. And I think it's reasonable to believe that they are a double-digit win team.
Yeah, and as the scale slides in terms of perspective, Miami, you know, they get off to that 3-0 start, but it was at the Jets, the Raiders, Titans. They got smacked by the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're welcoming a Miami team at home, not going to be an underdog this week, and you're talking about getting to
4-1.
4-1.
Yeah, I mean it's a totally different. 4-1 with Pittsburgh coming in your house, and we did talk about this the other night. I mean, you've got a load of home games coming up. I mean, you just have – if you can find ways to protect your house here, Under Armour style, you know, you must protect this house.
Click, clack.
Yeah. If you can do that, you're – I mean, I think 6-2 is not – I mean, 6-2 is a totally attainable – there's no reason they couldn't go 3-1 again in the second when you talk about 3-4 at home. When you just did 3-1 with 3-4 on the road. And Tampa Bay, like, you know, everyone was digging them for a couple of weeks, and now everybody thinks they stink again. Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh has never looked more beatable than they will be in week 6. Still without Le'Veon Bell, still without defense, all kinds of people mad, got just outclassed by Baltimore on Monday Night Football in their own house, a team that the Bengals just beat in a primetime game. You know, and Miami, you mentioned the only wins they have are against some not-so-great teams, and they just got housed by the Patriots. So, you know, there's a lot of potential for wins. I mean, Kansas City, you're probably not going to go to Kansas City and win, but there's a lot of potential to win those games and be sitting there and steal one here, lose one there. 6-2?
Dude, you are like Joe Mixon on the sideline right now with your...
I'm all over the place.
With your optimism and enthusiasm.
Oh, yeah, I am.
It's infectious, though.
Yeah, it is infectious.
You don't want to curb it.
Oh, don't worry. I'm about to get negative.
Okay.
I just am saying, and my whole point of my optimistic rant here is this. That's the difference between 3-1 and 2-2 and how huge finishing that game was. They put themselves in that spot by not winning in Carolina, of really needing that game, and then being ahead the way they were. And I just it's 2-2. It's only one game difference, but it would have felt so much bigger. I feel like. I don't know. I could be, and they could lose to Miami, and it's all over. I mean, that's how the league is. I mean, everybody puts so much emphasis on week to week, but you've got to. The league changes so much week to week. No more so is that more obvious than this past week. Patriots are dead. Oh, no, they're alive.
Nope.
You know?
Yep.
Detroit might have something. No, they stink. Fire Bill O'Brien. They won. You know, I mean.
That's what we do, though.
That's it.
We are prisoners of every moment.
We try to not do that here.
Here.
The one thing we try to do is keep everybody realistic. And that means we try not to dive too deep down when things are not looking great, and we try to not go too high. Somebody mentioned to me on Twitter the other day, like, oh, you seem really excited. Was it the Waffle House?
Yeah.
I was like, I honestly felt like that was a huge win. Like, I felt like that was really a momentous W for this team, being as young as they are. That sense of belief that you create that you're going to win is a big deal.
And, well, we certainly could knock that. We are going to knock the defense until it proves that we shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
But that game had everything to make you feel, to give you that enthusiasm in your tone. Because AJ did what AJ does. Andy's still playing great. Carlos, Gino, those guys played great, had sacks. Carl Lawson had a huge sack. Mm-hmm. Every key guy. John Ross had redemption. Tyler Boyd is still moving forward. Like, there was, it was a perfect way for us to feel great about Cincinnati moving forward.
Yeah,
in that, on the walkout.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just this season is gonna come down to, because I think the offense has proven, barring injuries, obviously that's same for everybody. I think the offense has proven it's gonna be one of the better ones in this league. They've got too many weapons, and we'll see what happens without Eifert, because you know they've struggled the last couple years without him. He's just a difference maker. But I still think they've got more than enough weaponry to prove that they're going to be a really good offensive group. It's just going to come down to if the defense can fix itself. To whether this team is one that wins the North and could win a playoff game, and who knows, or a one that, you know, has a good season but has holes. You know, I think that's what's going to come down. And that's crazy to say, because we're sitting here talking about a team that has Pro Bowlers and former Pro Bowlers and guys you think are future Pro Bowlers and potential All-Pros, like, in big spots. I mean, William Jackson III, everyone thought he was going to be the greatest thing. He had a rough day on Sunday. Not that he can't bounce back, but it wasn't a great one. He's now given up a slew of touchdowns. Gino, Carl, all these guys, like, these, it's not like there aren't dudes there. And now there's about to be another dude.
Yep.
So, shall we?
Let's delve.
Everybody's favorite topic. Everybody loves talking about Vontaze Burfict. And I guess the question is, what is the real effect going to be? Now, you know, this post on Tuesday, no one was really in the locker room on Monday. Including Tez. They had some NFLPA meeting. So no one talked. So we haven't seen him. We know he's been given a roster exemption, which the assumption is that he'll practice this week. They'll IR Eifert, and then they'll bring Burfict up. And I would expect him to play. How much? Who knows? We don't know. They'll probably ease him back in. We don't know what his weight's going to be. We don't know what he's been doing workout-wise. He had an injury in the preseason. We don't know the status of that. There's just a lot that is totally unknown about this dude right now and what you're going to get when he comes back. The biggest mistake they can make is think that he's going to come back with Superman cape on. Because he's one dude, and they've done this before, and it takes him a while. We know that, at the very least, we know it takes him a while. And you can't ask one dude to do that, especially a guy like Vontaze.
Well, there's periods of this, right? There's without Tez, there's acclimation Tez, then there's optimal Tez.
Yeah.
Or slippery slope Tez.
Right.
And we're going to go through acclimation Tez, which I haven't seen. I'm picking up experiences here, but you've seen acclimation Tez.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen the last couple of years, he's been very sluggish for about a month. That's who he's been. Coming off these suspensions, he's come off of them and looked behind, looked slow, not been the playmaker you're used to seeing. That's just the truth. That's what it has been. It doesn't mean it won't. Maybe this year will be different. Maybe something happened and this is different. I don't know. That's just, if you look at the history, that's what it's been. And then about, you know, then you start to get, he gets into a month of playing games and things start to come together. Maybe it'll be different this year. I don't know. I don't have any reason to believe that it would be different. That's one of those, the same thing as we say with this defense. Once I see it, I'll think differently. I haven't seen it in 3 years now. And you could even technically, although it's different circumstances, go back to 15 when he came off injury. He was slow to come back too, as far as being that dude.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see what he, and, you know, Pittsburgh is coming up. Lord knows he's going to be trying to kill Juju Smith-Schuster. So you worry about suspensions, the new rules. How's Ted's going to handle the new rules? There's a lot of questions there.
And we have zero answers.
Yeah. So I don't know. So we'll see. I worry more with him, you know, how other teammates react to him being out there. Now, I guess you could say, I mean, how much worse can his defense be?
Right.
But, I mean, I worry about how other teammates will react to him.
I think if you were in the camp of, if you were tired of Tez or sort of over it all, you would have wanted to see Hardy Nickerson, Nick Vigil, Preston Brown, those guys haven't been able to make it easy for you to dismiss Tez. Like, you can't say that since he's better off without him.
And that's something that, I mean, that is a conversation that has been had. And I've had that thought, too, of, you know, if these young linebackers really were, you would think about that for a second. Like, are we better off? And inevitably, they look like they need another playmaker. So, and he's your best shot at having one.
Right.
If you can get him to figure out. It'll be interesting to see how Terrell Austin handles Fontez. Because he's different. I mean, it's just, he's a different cat. He's a different dude. And he's been enabled around here for a long time to do whatever he wants without really being checked much. But he really, you know, because he was Paul Gunther's boy. I mean, that's fact. Like, Gunther was a linebacker's coach when Tez came up and played great, made him look good, and was part of Gunther getting a promotion. They love each other, and it was probably too friendly for a guy like Tez. Tez probably needs someone like Zim who's a little bit more of a disciplinarian. I don't know what Terrell Austin's going to be with him. We don't know yet because he really hasn't had him. All he's basically done is say, I don't care who you are. I have no history with you. I'm playing whoever I think is the best player. I don't care about anything. And he's proven, he's done that.
Right.
That's been the case.
I think it's fascinating. And it's just, as somebody, again, I'm new. I'm the new guy.
Mm-hmm.
Psychologically, though, for somebody that can play it at that level and be that alpha, what it takes to do that, but then the other side of that, what happens if it goes too far or you can't control it? And like you said, I mean, Zimmer was so good for him in terms of maybe setting a line or having a certain attitude as a defensive coordinator that Tez had to respect. And it will be interesting to see how he is with Terrell and what kind of accountability or what they're able to impose on him to sort of try to have the good without falling off the edge.
And he's targeted.
Right, he's known.
I mean, that's just it. I mean, and that's has been the case for years. I mean, before all these rules have made things harder on defenders, he was targeted and people were looking for 55, and he has a reputation that nobody can deny that has been used against him. He doesn't get any of the benefit of the doubt ever, nor does he deserve it. He has relinquished that. And so that's also part of it. That's going to be part of the interesting thing about this too, is how long can he go? I would venture to say that we will not see it. We will see him playing at about 50% of the snaps, probably. I think the team is interested to see what they're going to get in him. They don't want it to cost the game that they tried to throw him back into the fire and he wasn't ready.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
Well, I've had a lot of sports writer buddies that keep checking in. They're like, "How's it going? How's the new gig going?" Mm-hmm. I'm like, "Oh, it's great. It's great. What's the locker room like?" I'm like, "Oh, it's good. Have you talked to Tez yet?"
Yeah.
Everybody, they don't know, but they just want to know.
Yeah.
What's Tez like?
He's one of the few guys that pushes the needle nationally around here because of everything that's happened with him.
Right.
He's one of the few known quantities, which it's funny. You know, there was like no national attention on the Bengals win against the Falcons. And I don't know, because you were covering University of Kentucky, where John Calipari farts, and like,
yeah,
there's 15 stories, and ESPN's got a sitting in E60, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this team had a huge win with a last second touchdown by AJ Green in Atlanta, and all the things that happened down there, and it's like, it just floated off into space like a non-factor. Mm-hmm. I mean, you read Peter King, who writes about 15,000 words or something in Monday Morning.
He just talked about Eifert.
There was a brief snippet about the Eifert injury. Not even a mention. I mean, and this is Peter King, who actually could have easily been like, "Hey, this is why I picked the Bengals to win the North," because he was the one guy who kind of came out of nowhere and did it. It's just so odd. I mean, there's many reasons, I guess. I mean, but maybe there's just non-believers nationally. They assume that the other shoe's going to drop on them. But I just can't. It's just odd to me when you experience a game like that, and you're like, "Man, what a game!" And then just no one even didn't even touch anything nationally.
Such a football motivation story too. Just what? Keep that chip up there on the shoulder.
Oh yeah, they like that.
Mm-hmm.
They like that. Bill Lazor said that on with us on Monday. He said, "You know, I liked it in camp, in preseason, and everything. No one's talking about
it.
It's like we're not even here. It's quiet. We just do our thing.
No extra noise.
No extra noise. You know, what's not to like about that from a coach and team perspective? Because this ain't like college football. You don't need a politic.
Nope.
You don't need to get a ranking. You just got to go win. All right. Let's bring in PFF. It's we've got stats. He's got deep numbers. So we're going to go to our guy, Austin Gale, who is going to give us our weekly update on what the deep analytics from PFF are saying.
All right, it is time to dive into the numbers. Focusing over the Rhine, Austin Gale is joining us. What is up, Austin?
Nothing much, man. Just getting through another week. Season's in full swing. Bengals are looking good. Great win in Atlanta. It's a very exciting time right now.
Yeah. What is, you know, Andy Dalton, I think, to most people, many of us who were surprised against Carolina, you guys had him graded really high, even though he threw all the interceptions. And now where does he kind of stand in the bigger picture of all the quarterbacks this season, as far as how he's played according to your grades and QB metrics?
After middling grades in weeks one and two, he has turned in two very, very high grades against the Carolina Panthers and now most recently against the Atlanta Falcons. He is on a career high pace right now, playing, you know, lights out with all the weapons he has, using Tyler Boyd effectively. AJ Green and him are connecting nicely. He is having one of the best seasons, one of the best starts to a season in his career, and he looks very good. He's ranking inside the top 10 in overall grade, passing grade, passer rating under pressure, passer rating when kept clean. All the metrics in the books, Andy Dalton is looking good. He's taking advantage of weapons, and he's playing well against with an offensive line that allowed a lot of pressure to Carolina, allowed a lot of pressures against Atlanta, and now he's playing well with those pressures. That's a sign of good things. When a quarterback is having a good season under pressure, like we saw with Case Keenum, you can go the distance. When you're playing poorly under pressure, that's when things break down for your offense and things break down for the quarterback, and points don't go on the board.
Yeah, I mean, interesting thing is, despite all the pressures, there haven't been that many sacks, and that's a sign of a quarterback that's taking care of business and getting the ball out. The pressures do happen. All right, so let's talk a little bit about on the offensive side of the ball. What were some of the other eye-popping numbers that you saw jump out from the stats from the Bengals-Falcons game?
Eye-popping from the negative side, you have to look at Cordy Glenn. He allows another 6 pressures in Atlanta. He's now allowed 14 pressures in the last 2 weeks after allowing just 2 pressures in the first 2 weeks. He needs to fix his woes in pass protection because he's supposed to be this stalwart, you know, staple to this offensive line that's always tried and true and able to turn in positive performances. But when he's allowing that many pressures, regardless of how well Dalton is playing under pressure, that's going to hurt the Cincinnati offense. That's going to keep them from putting points on the board. And when you combine that with Bobby Hart obviously having a shaky start to the season, Alex Redman allowing the 3rd most pressures among guards, this offensive line can't afford to have another piece that was supposed to be a staple for them start to falter.
Absolutely. Let's go to the defense side of the ball, where it's obviously was a struggle against Matt Ryan and company on Sunday. Who did you have with your lowest grades, and what were some of the numbers associated with those?
Yes, unfortunately, William Jackson III, who had an outstanding season in 2017, is having a rough start. He ends up allowing over 100 yards receiving, I think 7 receptions and a touchdown. He is not having a good start for whatever reason. He is allowing way too many passes. He's playing way more conservative than he was a year ago. That's not a good sign for a Bengals defense that was hoping to lean on him as their number one cornerback as Greg Kirkpatrick continues to kind of put together up and down performances. William Jackson having a bad start to the season is going to start to hurt this, you know, Cincinnati defense if their offense can't put out points on the board and win in shootouts like they did in Atlanta. William Jackson has to find a way to turn it around now that a quarter of the season's over.
Yeah. Well, let's take a quick peek at Miami. Who's been, you know, there's kind of a, I think for a lot of people that don't see them very often, and they've done a gutting of their roster in some spots. You know, they're kind of a different group that not many people are familiar with. Who's been some of their top playmakers down there this year that the Bengals can look out for?
Yeah, Kenyon Drake, dating back to last season, has been one of the best running backs in creating yards for himself, both after contact and via forcing his tackles. He's a guy that if you don't bottle up, both from a, you know, in the passing game and when he's running the football, can take over games and really help, you know, Ryan Tannehill and company move the ball and put a lot of points on the board and make, you know, make that Cincinnati offense again go toe-to-toe with a high-scoring offense. On the defensive side of the ball, Xavien Howard has had an outstanding start to the season. He shut down Amari Cooper in week 3 against the Raiders, and he's been able to, you know, allow very few yards in his coverage and very few touchdowns. He's got a lot of picks on the season as well. This is a guy that's probably going to go right up against A.J. Green and can have a good game against him if the Bengals aren't able to schematically find ways to get him open.
All right, Austin, a pleasure as always. What can people go to pick up some of the good stuff at PFF?
Come to ProFootballFocus.com. We're pushing out a lot of good content now. And in addition to that, we have a lot of tools to help with your fantasy team, help with, you know, the gamblers out there, and also just the statistics nerds like myself kind of dig through the data.
All right. That's awesome. We will talk to you next week. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Paul.
All right. Much thanks to Austin Gale for joining us as always. This is also a great time to remind you, you need to be going down to 50 West and drinking beer. I shouldn't have to tell you to drink beer. It's not a thing that I should have to do. But it's something that you need to be doing. Are you going to drink beer?
I like beer.
Yeah. It's worth drinking. And if you're going to drink beer, you might as well drink good stuff. And that means drinking 50 West, Coast to Coast. You get the Doom Pedal. That's my man Jason Williams that I do that's a Cincinnati podcast with. He thinks Doom Pedal is the greatest liquid that's ever been created. I'm pretty sure if you were holding Doom Pedal in your hand right now, a 6-pack, and you saw Jason, he would give you like double value, double face value for that. You could get like $15 from him, $15-$20.
I'd split it. It'd make the podcast more interesting.
I agreed. Absolutely. But anyway, a reminder, you got to get down there. Their brewing queue is coming up in early November. More details on that with Optimistic Bobby when we talk to him next. That's an awesome event they do at Great Lake Barbecue. We're going to be down there. It's like a big barbecue off. It's an awesome event, early November. The playoff beer fridge has never been more in play. Now.
It's on.
It's on. Now they're 3-1. I think it's time to, like, build the fridge. I told him I'd buy the pad. And he needs to create the Laser Cats Ale. You weren't here last year. Bring in these when they promoted Bill Lazor, mm-hmm. They came up with the idea of Laser Cats, and they have like, Laser Cats. So he was really into the Laser Cats concept, and he has many drawings caricatures that I think would be perfect to put on the cans of potential Laser Cats ale.
That's a brand we can get
behind.
I mean,
it's the new Who Day beer, which anybody that was of age listening to this podcast, that was, from back in the 88 season, I think, Super Bowl beer. And when I was at Stanford Jennings' house for a story this offseason, he had a six-pack of it just sitting. People that were around back then kept that beer. That's like souvenir beer. Laser Cats Ale could be souvenir beer if they win a playoff game. Drought killing beer. That's how good it'll taste. Do you want any?
I want it all.
All right. So let's do this. You know, normally we do three questions, but you know, there's lots of good questions out there this week. So we're gonna do some like
rapid fire.
Rapid-ish. Rapid with some introspection.
With ability to tangent.
Ability to tangent if necessary. We're just gonna run through because we got some good ones here. Okay, from our good friend at Who Day Know It All, why on earth is WJ3 playing so much off coverage? Is that a DC scheme or a position coach thing? It's not a position coach thing. I don't understand why they're not being more aggressive defensively with their cover guys. I mean, that's not
something that's come up with Dre too, right?
Yes, so it's the same concept. So I think, you know, it's easy to understand is whatever's going on. I don't know if they're in a specific coverage guy for not being there, but them giving up slants in the red zone against easy touchdowns. So if they, I that is a scheme thing. That there's no Williams not going rogue and backing off. If he was going rogue, he'd be going the other way.
Yeah.
From our man Jeff at Up North 531, will the Bengals extend Croft or Uzama before the season is over? No. How about that?
Good.
In conversations that I've had, I think they're done giving out any contract extensions. The only reason they did the few into the season a little bit was because they had so much money hanging out there with the Dunlap Geno stuff, everything that they normally would have done before that sort of had to go on a back burner, and then that didn't come until late, so then they had to work through that. So that's why you had those extensions come in later, and I think that they're in those guys in the free agency period. And it might be a Thunderdome situation. Which one of the two do they like them? So we'll see what happens with that. I'm going to skip over a couple and we'll come back to it. What does Philadelphia want for Zach Ertz?
Too soon.
They don't want to trade Zach Ertz. Why is there a thought out there that they want to trade Zach Ertz?
There's a tweet.
There is a tweet. Zach Ertz is really good, and just a big part of them winning the Super Bowl. I think they'd rather just hang on to him. So what do they want?
Too much.
Probably more than this team would ever be willing to give up. I don't see them trading for a tight end as far as Eifert fallout goes.
Right.
I mean, my guess is you will see, as I mentioned before, the Eifert-Burfict switch tight end. They would probably just promote Jordan Franks as a fourth tight end in case someone got hurt. They invested in Mason Schreck for a reason. They kept him for a reason. You know, they were getting trade calls on Mason Schreck, and that's why they didn't let him go. He was a big part of the roster gymnastics that happened with Michael Johnson. Was they did not want to put a guy like Tate or Schreck out on the street, knowing that they would probably get picked up. That's because they really believe in those guys and think that they've got something. So I think we're about to learn about Mason Schreck earlier. I got to put something to bed.
It's funny you mentioned Tate.
I don't understand why people keep thinking that Auden Tate is going to become Tyler Eifert. I mean, I get it. He's a big body receiver. This team, I have answered this so many times on this podcast, and this team has told me so clearly, look, they are not making Auden Tate a tight end. And I appreciate the question, Trey Golling. With Eifert down, as Auden Tate become active on game day? He's not connected to the tight ends. They don't view him as connected to the tight ends. I get it, because so much what Eifert has done has been in the slot. And you're looking for a big body. I get all that. They don't view him as a tight end or someone that is at all connected to doing tight end things. Should they? Maybe. I mean, situationally, everyone knows he would be Auden Tate could be a red zone threat situationally. I'd put Auden Tate up and put Josh Malone down at this point, which is another question that we have about what was going on with Cody Corbin over Josh Malone. I think what got lost was Josh Malone was also, despite all the injuries going on, and when Cody Core's coming in front of you, Josh Malone had four snaps.
Four snaps. Core had 11.
Yeah. Most of those at the very end there. I mean, in theory, if Josh Malone was the fourth receiver, if Josh Malone's got, what was a, do you have the snaps up right now?
Yeah.
What was Josh Malone's special teams contribution?
Ooh, you asked me a question.
Because he had the four snaps, but on special teams, I don't know that he made much of a contribution. At least Auden Tate would have a role. So if you think Josh Malone is not worth it, I feel like at that point I'd be putting Auden Tate in some red zone with Tyler Eifert, obviously. So if there's a connection there, maybe that's it. For losing, it would come out of maybe Josh Malone gets demoted or something like that. But he's not.
He's not been in on kick return or punt return in two games.
Yeah. So he's not much. It's to me, if that's what Josh Malone is going to be, I'd rather have Auden Tate. At least you know there that you can have a guy that can compete for some tough catches and be a red zone weapon for you. Okay, let's go back down the list here. From NWags40, Nick asks, if Trey Hopkins continues his good play on the line, is there any chance he stays as center and Price moves to right guard when he returns, or Hopkins takes over for Redmond when Price returns? And then he asked the core question as well. So Billy Price looks like we'll be back for Pittsburgh.
He does not. He didn't have the robotic boot.
No, he's been working out. He's on the bike on the side. Things are looking good for Pittsburgh.
The Tron boot.
Yeah, the Tron boot is gone, which is good. I think there's a lot of optimism around him, and I think that's probably the spot. Hopkins is not going to stay at center. Billy Price is doing a good job. He's a first-round pick.
Yeah.
His upside. That's now. It would be if they like what Hopkins' attitude has been and the energy he's played with. Redmond hasn't been the great. We're hoping at this point. I mean, he's let up a bunch of pressures. He's been okay, but at the same time, we probably don't talk enough. This offensive line, particularly in pass protection, has actually played pretty well.
Yeah, it's been easy to get down on that group. I think, I thought Bobby Hart didn't look very good against Atlanta. Cordy had some bad moments, the penalty late. Redmond is the one that didn't grade him. I mean, he was really bad grading out on at least Pro Football Focus in pass blocking. But for all of that, you have a stat, right, on that, on the offensive line?
Yeah, I mean, they're a top 10 group as far as sacks allowed per pass play. And, Bill was talking about it's really how hard it is on that last drive to throw when they know you're going to throw. And the last 10 plays of that drive, all of those plays were passes at the end. And Andy did not get hit. When everybody knew what was happening, back and go, they were able to protect. And we've talked about everybody else on that drive at this point, but we haven't talked about them. So I think some credit with what this offense is doing has to go to the line. Mixon is averaging 4.7 a rush. Gio's averaging 4.6 a rush. They're protecting at a pretty high level, at least as far as allowing sacks and things like that. Is Bobby Hart going to get beat? Yep. yep, that's going to keep happening. That's who he is. Like, he's not a shutdown right tackle. Is Redmond going to give up some pressures? Yep. Is he going to have some penalties? Yep. But if they can have a top 10 group as far as sacks per pass play and average 4.6 yards per carry, do you want to change? I don't know.
I think you just roll Billy back in there. And the discussion, I like the idea of a discussion with Hopkins, Redmond at right guard.
Yeah. Yeah, and because they're – and so another question about the offensive line was about Jake Fisher from Aaron Williams, William 988. What's up with him? He could be a potential upgrade over Bobby Hart, but he hasn't had a look at all. Is it health-related or skill-related? It's not health-related. All the stuff that went on with his heart last year is fine. He's been full-time practice. He's not even touched the injury report. He just wasn't good. He was better than Cedric Ogwehi.
Yeah.
But he just wasn't very good in the preseason. And I think there is actually concern that he would be a significant drop-off from Bobby Hart. That's where they're at right tackle right now.
Yeah, boys.
Anybody that's watched him play.
Well, that's I'm going to pull my new guy card.
Cedric Ogwehi attempt to play offensive line.
These are things as the new guy. What's my grace period on this?
No, this is it.
Oh, that's it?
It is a head-scratcher how a 2015 first-round pick would be inactive 4 years later.
Well, these are things I think about it. Like when I type up the inactives on Sunday, when I typed his name in there, I was like, how is this?
Yeah. Wasn't this guy a big deal at one point?
Yeah.
He sure was.
He sure ain't.
He's just a guy. I mean, I honestly think there's probably not a whole lot of real difference between Bobby Hart and Cedric Ogwehi and Jake Fisher if you had to play them all year.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, at a certain point, bad looks bad, and it showed that he cares. I don't think they got enough that Cedric cares. I just think has just not played super well. But Bobby Hart, for now, seems to care. And Bill Lazor is doing a good job of helping him out. Because unlike last year when you can't help everywhere. But when you have one issue, you can chip, you can nudge. We should talk more about nudging.
Yeah, you get a chip and a nudge, a rub.
A rub. Yeah. All those things you can do. Even just lining tight ends over to that side more often. They've used lots of multiple tight end sets to help with all that stuff too. Mm-hmm. All that stuff helps. And you can work ways around it. And credit to Bill Lazor. He deserves it for what he's been able to do with a new system. You know, we use the excuse of the new system on the defensive side of the ball and the new coordinator on the other side of the ball. But all new system on offense. And they're humming, and they're figuring out ways to do it. So you've got to credit Lazor for what he's been able to do on that side of the ball, and that includes getting the offensive line together. And, you know, Frank Paul too, obviously, the producer. Why has Andrew Billings been such a non-factor after a brilliant preseason? A non-factor? That position is inherently non-factor-ish. Fat defensive has not been as effective as he was in preseason, no. He hasn't been as effective in like that. Outside of Carolina, it's not like we've seen him just getting blown into the linebackers and not getting allowing guys to get freed up. I think he's been okay. He hasn't flashed as much, even though that position is not necessarily like flash worthy. All right, what else? Let's keep going. Let's see. We've got Tez questions. Everybody has Tez questions, of course. We talked about the defense. Okay, from our guy Luke Southerington. If Andy keeps up his level of play, does he get another extension? Ooh. No. Not right now. I mean, keeps up? Yeah. I mean, if he plays like... Right? I mean... They're going to host one. If he... Even if there are 24 interceptions, if you take it. He's had bad luck on those.
Yeah.
I don't put that. I'd put on him. Because at a certain point, you throw balls that can get tipped up. Some of that stuff, he's had drops. You know, the Hail Mary thing.
No, that one doesn't count.
Doesn't even count. So five. The John Ross thing. Are we really putting the John Ross quit ball on Andy? No. Four. I mean,
Croft was being held.
Croft was being held, and all of a sudden the ball hits off his hands. Okay, we're down to three. You know,
and then
the other John Ross ball in Carolina
could have knocked it down.
I mean, he threw to a spot that John Ross didn't go to. You know who I believe in that argument. So we're down to two. I mean, you know,
Josh Malone not coming back to the ball.
Right, who has clearly been punished for that.
Now we're down to one.
Now we're down to
one. We can erase that other one for some reason.
I'm just, at the very least, if you just take, okay, well, there's some of that. Three? If he has 44 touchdowns and 12 interceptions, I'm going to say they're going to win the North and win a playoff game. I'll go ahead and say that. If that's what Andy Dalton is. And then after this year, you start to have that conversation. That's out in the distance. I mean, his contract is going to be up. The quarterback market is what it is. If he puts together a couple of big seasons, sure, you start having those conversations. They're looking for – I mean, we know that they look for other options there. I mean, they have aggressively investigated quarterbacks the last couple of years, trying to develop the next Andy, because – paying quarterbacks is just debilitating to a roster. You know, the advantage they've had is they have such a bargain deal with Andy that they pay him like a bottom level quarterback, and he gives you a little bit above that. And so far this year, much above that.
Yes.
So, you know, that's a thing too. All right. I don't see anything. I think that's, we ran through a bunch of questions. Good job. Thanks for everybody for sending all your questions in. Always appreciate that. Okay. What do you got? Any? Am I going to teach you how to do anything this week?
My car's still running.
That's congrats. Still making the drive.
We're
working on that. Your car is still running. Very important.
Other than that, I'm just doing my job.
I don't need to teach you how to do your job, so that's good. We won't. Next week we'll come in with something that I have to teach you how to do.
Like it.
In Cincinnati. Have you had any good restaurants here in the city? So you haven't been able to get out much. Because you're in and out, and you're at work, and then you're just trying to get home.
That's right. We need to.
Show Fletcher a good restaurant. Maybe where I start you. I think you always, like, you feel like you have to start at the Eagle because it's so strong down on OTR. I want to take you out to, like, out my way by, like, Mazunte. It's just so incredible if you're into that type of stuff. So maybe that's where we'll do. Maybe we'll have restaurant reports.
Okay.
And you can report back on what you – what is your, like, milieu?
Oh, I'm wide open there. I'm multiple.
You're multiple?
Yes.
Versatile, yes. A versatile piece. All right. Good to know. All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back with the Deuces. We talk a little bit more about Miami in specific. That'll be on Thursday. And we look forward to catch up with you then. And, of course, back a bunch of home games. Oh, it's going to be so glorious. No more of these road trip Mondays. They're so tough. So
it'll be my first home game.
First home game. You're right. Yeah, you came in right before the road trips. All right. Well, we'll have some stuff to teach you about that, too. The Bengals buffet, the press box buffet.
The peach cobbler.
The cobbler, yeah. You got two strong meals in Carolina. In Atlanta, they do a really good job with the food. This will not be at that level. It's good. It's okay. It's totally okay. And it's very middling, especially in comparison to the two that you just had, just so you know. All right, thanks everybody for listening. We'll talk to you next time on the BBP.